The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. It's Brandon Lydia Talk Starman! So, this is our 26th episode of Brent and Lydia Talk Starman.
26?
I know, we've been doing this for, I guess, technically half a year now? I mean, even though we've missed a few weeks here and there, but, you know, 26 is half of 52, and there's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Commitment.
Yay. So this episode, we are going to be talking about the Starman Volume 2 Annual for 1996, which is annual number 1.
So that's what the number means, okay?
Yeah. Like, so do you know about annuals?
Not really, no.
So, for a while there, brief synopsis of comic book history. They would basically do, for some of their series, like, once a year, they would do just kind of a bigger, thicker edition that would kind of be just a little outside story.
Yeah.
Like that kind of fit in the continuity of what was going on and kind of stood outside it.
Okay.
And then like more and more the annuals kind of became a place for industry-wide stories. So, like, for example, we want to do a story where Superman and Starman and Wonder Woman all go do stuff. Rather than have that kind of go between certain comic books, they may make the decision to have the story told in those three comics' as annuals.
All the characters together?
Kind of, yeah. Like, this one isn't quite an example of it. What this annual is it's mentioned very briefly on the inside cover, Earth is Dead, Legends of a Dead Earth, because that was kind of a theme that ran throughout all the DC annuals in that year. So in this one, it wasn't quite like a crossover, but it was a thematic thing of here's a story of, you know, kind of way in the future. And it gave the different comic creators a theme to work with, but allowed them lots of freedom to do what they want. Like, I've seen some of the Earth is Dead ones where they almost did like a throwback to a Western. I can't remember which issue that was, but it's kind of, and it's kind of, it takes place both outside of continuity and enhances it, and we'll kind of get more into that as we talk about this issue of Starman.
Okay.
But yeah, annuals are basically supposed to be once a year special comics for the comic lines.
Okay. Got it.
Yay.
Guys, you might hear this crunching sounds because I'm actually eating something, so.
Oh. You know, so I guess eating fans will have a little extra bonus. What are you eating?
It's like peanut taffy. I'm done with it though. I need something to moisturize my throat. I feel like it's a bit scratchy right now, but I didn't know it was peanut taffy. I thought it was a candy.
I like the fact that you're like, my throat feels scratchy. Peanuts and taffy. That's really what'll soothe. Should I get a cough drop? Nope. Peanut taffy.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Anyways, thank you for that brief history of comic books, because that's something that, like, you learn everything at something every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, and I just ask because I know you're kind of new to comic books.
I am, very. Yeah.
So since this annual is kind of like a mini anthology, we decided two things. One, we decided is to kind of put away our normal talk about that date because, well, we're already talking about all the months in 96.
Yes.
And the other thing we decided is to split up our synopsis. Mm-hmm. And I'll give a synopsis of one of the stories, and then we'll discuss it. And Lydia will do the synopsis for the other, and then we'll discuss that.
Yay!
Game plan.
Yes. So prepared. We did not just, like, whip this up the minute before we started.
Don't let him see Oz behind behind the veil.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine. Okay, so, Earth is dead. Legends of the Dead Earth. Well, what's Legends of the Dead Earth? What is that, the name of the series?
Of the crossover event. Yeah.
Okay, got it. I see.
Yeah.
All right. So, where do we start?
Well, why don't we start with... So, I'm going to be talking about the frame story, which was penciled by Craig Hamilton.
Right.
And I'll also be talking about our Prince Gavin tale, which had pencils by Brett Blevins, who also did the inks for that. The penciler for the Craig Hamilton is Ray Snyder. For this entire issue, our colorist is Kevin Summers. Our letterer is Bill Oakley. Our assistant editor is Chuck Kim. And our editor is Archie Goodwin.
Yay.
It's interesting. It looks like, font-wise, just noticing the cover, editor, the Archie, seems to be given the font
I know,
size.
Yeah.
Because I was, wait, the editor Archie is Goodwin? That doesn't make... Oh, right. Editor Archie Goodwin. Okay.
Yeah, but if you notice, the Archie is a little bit taller than the editor. So.
Yeah. It seems to be like halfway between... the standard credit size and the standard name size.
Yeah. Just kind of... Really wonder why. Hmm. Why? Let's ask Archie Goodwin. Does he have Twitter?
poor Archie Goodwin has passed away.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We'll get to that because it kind of seems to be a turning point for Starman in general.
Okay. All right, then.
So, our frame story for this is in our far distant future... A benevolent ruler is going to spend his days telling kids stories, as all benevolent rulers should do. And it's the Shade!
Yay! It took a while for me to figure out, actually.
Well, he talks to a group of kids about stuff, and they like, one of them in particular likes happy endings. And he starts off with a tale of Gavin. Now, in this tale of Gavin, we learn his history, that he was a kind of a spoiled, snobby prince. And then his sister, who was also a spoiled and snobby princess. They had fights. He became Starman because of meeting M'Thor. And then, hey, what do you know? He's now a hero and his sister's dead. But he's got a wife and she's awesome. And there, everyone's happy until Big Bad Energy Wave is coming their way with only Prince Gavin to defend the planet. So he tries to go and do that whole planet defending thing, and, well, he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the sad thing that keeps this from being a truly happy ending is that, well... He probably didn't need to go because somewhere else there was a distant battle and, you know, the hero stopped it. So basically his sacrifice was all for naught. And even though, you know, they think that his people do believe that his sacrifice saved them, in the reality he didn't really do much but die and be brave.
Mm.
Well, that's a bleak thing.
It is.
So shall we discuss the Gavin story?
Yeah. Okay. First off, where do we begin?
I guess, why don't we do our usual thing, and let's talk about the cover.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, me too. Good. I like it.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, even though I knew that this was the shade on the cover, it did not occur to me that the guy in the first page was the shade.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I guess I didn't expect him to be the ruler of a planet or a country or whatever.
Yeah. When did you put that together?
Okay, so on this cover, the shade is huge.
Yes.
He's like a giant. Mm-hmm. And we have like the three... Are they the three starmen? Are they...
Yeah, we have the Jack Knight Starman. We have the Prince Gavin Starman, which seems to be kind of a mix of colors, because we have one of his traditional red and gold outfits that we see him in some of the flashbacks for the Prince Gavin story. Although most of the Prince Gavin stories, and the only time we see him with the cane staff thing, he's wearing a blue and yellow outfit.
Right, that was what I was looking for. No wonder I didn't catch that the middle one was Gavin. Okay, got it. So, three starmen. They are reaching for something, all of them.
Flying with hands extended and all holding... They're in similar poses with a cosmic rod in one hand and their left hands raised high above their heads.
Yeah. Okay, what else can we say about this cover?
You know, I like it. It seems to be that it's, they don't have credits listed inside this comic for who the cover artists are. We do have Tony Harris's signature on it. So we know that he was involved with this cover, but we also have another signature that I don't quite recognize.
Okay.
And you know, I mean, I like it. It's kind of an interesting mashup because the three heroes flying up look... I know this is a weird thing to say on a comic book show, but they look a little more cartoony than I'm used to seeing on the covers. It's good. It's just kind of like, huh. They look like toys.
Oh, action figures.
Yeah.
Yeah. I personally like the detail in the shades, his face and his clothes.
Yes.
I like that. It's very, do you call it Victorian? I'm not sure, but
I'll go with it.
Yeah, you know what I mean, right? The whole, there's a lot of, I don't know, it's just, you know, the scarf, it looks like a snake.
Well, it also shows that he's a proud member of a Hufflepuff.
Oh, yes. Yes, he... Oh, it's so weird thinking of Shane. But you know what? You never know with these things, you know? Loyalty and stuff. I'll go with it. I'll go with that headcanon. Yeah. Okay. What's next? Do we go on?
Yeah, let's go on. Let's go on.
Let's just blaze through this thing.
So how about we, let's go ahead and talk about the Gavin, and we'll just save conversations about the overall frame story for the very, very end.
Okay. Works for me.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, guys, we just had a meeting, sorry.
Yep. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, okay.
You know. I mean, people like it when we're off the cuff, right?
Yeah, I do.
I do, too.
Yeah.
They're seeing the magic as it happens.
As it happens, we're like Disneyland. Okay. So, you guys, we are going to talk about the Gavin story. And, well, right off the bat, I was actually, when I started reading it, I was like, wait, did this happen in another comic? Or is this introduced here for the first time? And then as I read oh, and I was like, oh, okay, he's going to be Starman. So, okay, this had to have happened a long time ago.
Yes, I can tell you. I've never read these comics themselves. But I can tell you that this Starman was created in the 80s. I think it was by, to name drop folk, by Paul Levitz and Steve Ditko. Paul Levitz has had a very extensive career writing mostly for DC, probably most well known for all his work with the Legion of Superheroes. Steve Ditko is a famous recluse. His two probably most widely known contributions to comics are he is the co-creator of Spider-Man and Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Again, crash course.
Yep. So these pretty much all of the events in this are from other comics, but the kind of this little touch in it, I think, is strictly James Robinson's.
I see. Well, I for the first two pages, I was like, well, this story is moving really fast. I didn't really have any particular feelings for it. But I caught on to the part. Excuse me. I caught on to the part where Gavin was thrown out by his sister, and yet he avenged her in the end. And I was like, wow, okay, good guy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like set the characterization up for Gavin in the first two pages. So that was nice.
Yeah. I like to think of those basically the first three pages of the story of kind of like when you're watching a TV show and it's like, previously on blah, 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 blah. And then they just kind of recap the last several seasons of everything that's important into like 30 seconds. And that's basically what this was. It's nice. It's concrete. You kind of get a sense of who these folk are, at least enough where I feel the rest of the story manages to pack like a little bit of a punch.
Right. Yeah. And I also think that it was a very skillful way to do it with the shade narrating, that whole thing. You know, he was he did it for three pages and then we finally had the dialogue for Gavin.
I really like that too, how once we flip that page, it feels like we've been caught up to the present of this story.
Yes. So it was really, really nice. The story itself, it did feel like a fairy tale. I don't know if you... Right?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah.
It was like even though it's obviously in space and stuff, and there are like scientists and, you know, what looks like a space station and, you know, Gundam. I don't know. It was very, very... very, I don't know, it was very Japanese in a way.
I can see that. I can see feeling that, getting that vibe off of it.
Yeah. So, it was kind of strange for me in a way, because we've been reading a lot of Starman, Opal City and everything. Wait a minute. This is in space.
Yeah. It's very different.
Yes, the feeling of it was... But then, it's strange because I've never really wondered the origins of the star power, you know? And it's star power. It has to come from the sky. And here you go, Lydia. Here's the story served to you on a silver platter. Yeah, so... That's what's happening, I guess, in this issue.
Well, yes. And I'm trying to separate what I know about what comes later from this. But one of the things I do like about this little tale, not only just because it's a small little moving story by itself, but it does kind of help set the table that even though our main focus for this whole comic is going to be Jack Knight, that it's also a story of pretty much all the Starmen.
Right.
And that, in a way, even though this guy's a very small part of it, because he was a Starman, he has a place in this tale. And I like that.
Gavin.
Is that another peanut taffy?
It's not. It's chocolate. Yeah.
Comfort food. It's a sad story.
Yeah. I just need something in my mouth. My voice sounds very weird today. Okay. Never mind. Okay, go on. Let's go on.
Oh, yeah, I really like, I like the artwork here. I'm right now I'm looking at the pages where he's got his white cape on and he's walking and his wife is running. Husband, please, before you go, a final moment. You know, and I like the art. At the same time, I feel it's good, but ultimately kind of forgettable.
Well, I felt it was very 1960s. I don't know if you understand what I mean. There's this panel where Maria, I think is that her name? I don't know. Maria. The wife. She has this line in the middle of her face, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, with the tears?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. So, it just felt a little bit like old.
Looking just at that panel, for some reason I'm almost thinking of like the pop art movement and Andy Warhol.
Right.
It's not, but you know, there's something about it that kind of evokes that.
Maybe that's why. Maybe, I don't know, I'm just like going off on that thought. It's been so commercialized that we don't really remember the characters that are drawn in that style.
And well, I think it also helps that even though I think it works in this story, there's very much a sense of melodrama
about
the whole thing. My heart has hurt too. Every day it hurts. So full is it with feeling for you. You are my everything, Mary.
Yeah.
Everything except my duty to the people who trust. Like, I mean, it's nice and it reads well, but it's definitely, I think it, like you said, it's a fairy tale, and because of that, it works perfectly tonally.
Yes. I did feel that weird feeling of displacement when they started talking. Because it just sounded very, it wasn't even archaic, it was very like, people don't talk like that. then I remember that actually is essentially they're humanoid aliens, so, you know, they might just have a different kind of linguistic sensibility on that planet, so... I kind of forgave them pretty fast when it came to that. But
kind of the planet of purple prose.
Yes. But, you know, it's interesting how there's this parallel with them and Adam and Eve. I just kept feeling that throughout the story because, you know, they would be in this, like, garden-looking place, naked.
Yeah, I did not get that, but now that you say it.
Yeah, and it was more than one panel that had like Gavin being naked in a garden, touching plants and stuff. So so it was like very Adam and Eve, for me.
Well, you know, except in this version, Adam flies off into a giant energy wave.
Yeah, that.
You know. But no, I think you're right on with that kind of first man type of imagery that is definitely used in this.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, come to think of it, was he was the first Starman?
No, I think the...
Oh, seriously? Okay.
Because I think, well... Yeah, because the events here with the energy wave are from a mid-80s Crisis on Infinite Earth with kind of reset the DC world. And so even chronologically in the world of DC, this would have been after Ted Knight. I mean,
oh, really?
Is how is what I'm pretty sure. Like I said, I've never read these comics that told like the beginning story. So seeing who they show makes me think it happened after after Ted Knight.
Got it. Okay. Is there anything else that we should be talking
about? You know, a few little moments. It's interesting that it's an interesting choice of how to end this.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, James Robinson could have done anything. You know, for example, he could have gone with the idea of, you know, having the antimatter vanish moments before, but he could have somehow had, like, you know, this gives Starman his beams, managed to hold it back just long enough to save his people, even though it cost him his life. You know, he could have gone that way with the story, but instead he kind of chose the much darker. Ultimately what he did was completely futile, and he would have accomplished just as much if he had stayed home eating peanut taffy. And it I think it's interesting that he made that choice.
I get what you mean. Like, it's not a satisfying ending. It's an ending that just, like, too bad. You know, it's a bit cruel, I think. Right?
Yeah.
That happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but yeah, I'm on the same page. It was, I read it and I was like, but you know, I've been reading this this book, a huge volume of fairy tales, and they sometimes end like this. They just like this open, unsatisfying ending, and then you're like, what the f? You know, it was a little bit like that. So maybe it's some kind of tradition thing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. That having that this might strengthen its feeling as a fairy tale.
And then on the outside, we have the Shade telling these kids a story, right? So maybe, I don't know, maybe they paid homage to fairy tales.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to the next story?
Yes, let's do it.
Yay.
Okay, so I think this is my turn.
Yes.
We're back in that palace-looking place, this throne room-looking place, with the Shade and the kids. And, excuse me, he's going to tell them another story. And we see this boy, his name is Lawrence Dare, and he's a descendant of the Odairs, and that's how I kind of knew that, okay, so this takes place way into the future. So the Shade launches into the story of how the Odairs paired up with Starman, except it wasn't so much as their story than a hearkening to the origin story of the Odairs and Starman. So the shade goes on to tell the story of, is his name William, I think, William Odair, the Odairs as we know it in our current Starman timeline, the dad, it's their dad. And he paired up with Ted Knight to fight a lot of crime back in the day.
Yeah.
So this was one of the stories, one of the cases that they worked on together. Probably even, maybe even the first case.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this witch that's terrorizing Opal City. And she has a magic broomstick. It's the image that they give us in this story is like she is magic, whereas Ted Knight is science. So Ted is being called by the police to come help on this case, and as it turns out, two police officers have been caught by this witch, and one of them was kind of abducted, while the other I don't know what the word winged means, but they say he was winged, and yes,
shot.
Oh, shot. Okay, so he was shot, but he somehow found the strength to cling onto the back of the van to trail his abducted colleague. So that's why these two cops are at the witch's lair. Okay, so Ted Knight risks his life to find these two cops, and one of them, the abductor one, he had already died, but the one that lived was William O'Dea. And so in the witch's headquarters, they kind of like, not headquarters, I don't know where they are, wherever she's locked them up, they fought back against the witch and got her captured and everything, and that was basically the story of how Starman and the O'Dares became partners. Yes.
Yay! Wow, so how where do you want to start with this one?
I don't know, it's very exciting. I would like to just dive in, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the witch's character, I was fascinated by this villain, because very interesting villain. It was it wasn't a forgettable villain. I liked it because she's female, I don't know. And also the art.
Mm-mm.
Very, very Corpse Bride, and the setup, the whole magic versus science thing, that really attracted me. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, J.H. Williams, has, he's got a great future from '96 to now. I mean, he's a phenomenally regarded penciler, who, looking at this comic from, 20 years ago, and thinking of what he does today, just how much of his talent has grown. So the art here is just, the seeds of a first-rate artist.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know that he was like a superstar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, at least to me, the stuff he did kind of recently with Batwoman is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting to me, to completely change subjects, is you had the great point about the first one feeling very much like a fairy tale. And I find it interesting to think of that and how there seems to be less, less pretense about this being a story that is being told.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's more like a recount of something.
Yeah.
Like, here's a history lesson for you guys. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do get that feeling as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Over here, the art is different, right? When you say penciler, it's the people who draw the thing?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So with this, scrolling back to the credits just to make sure, because I know the penciler is J.H. Williams on this, and the inker is J. H. Williams III, and the inker is Mick Gray.
Mm. Okay. The first page, you know, there was this feeling about it that really sucked me in. I don't know what. It was just, it was dark, but very effective.
Yes.
There's this part where Starman is descending, and there's a star on his chest and one on his cape. I don't know. That was, and also when they said, you know, Starman of the Tet Knight, he of the red and green. I was like, they just put that defining characteristic there, and then you're like, oh right, okay. So Ted's uniform was really different from Jack's.
Yes, yes.
And it was because we just came from Gavin. It was different from Gavin, but. Really, really different from Jack's, and it just evoked a certain kind of like Ted. Yeah, Ted when he was young and you know, superhero-y.
Yes, yes, and you know, I also like that this is a story of the Prairie Witch.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, we got like a very brief mention of.
We did?
I think so. I think we got a very brief mention of her at the beginning of the of when Jack went to the circus, where he's talking about Turk County, and he mentions like the kind of dark stuff that went on that people don't talk about in the Prairie Witch. I'm pretty sure she was mentioned briefly in that story arc, which is why kind of with this one, with it not just being here's a bank robber who liked to shoot people, that they also have, you know, the kind of ritualistic murder of Officer Roach.
Yeah.
That's like, man, that's Turk County. That's dark.
Right, and because they mentioned Turk County over here, you know, they were like, Turk County, and oh, Turk County, this is the place, you know, where the weird thing happened, and it really ties in. The feeling, the do you call it goss? I don't know, very,
sure, like, why not?
Right? Gothic? It's very gothic, and, horror, and I don't know, I like how they managed to blend these things. There's a layer to it that it's quite rare in stories you find nowadays. So,
yeah.
Yes.
And what do they often call it? Like, I'm kind of thinking of, what is it? Like Southern noir almost.
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's like you sometimes see it when they talk about kind of stories placed in the South that are dark and twisted, but they're kind of crime, but kind of supernatural. But kind of like, did you see True Detective the first season?
No, unfortunately.
Well, just that kind of story, or in a way, like, you know, although this is a little less, you know, not as in your face, but I'm also thinking of, True Blood, if you ever saw that.
I've heard of it, read the synopsis, but never really clicked on it. Okay, I would go check those out, though, but you have to tell me again, Southern?
I mean, I've kind of heard some people call it Southern Noir. I honestly can't say if that's, like, the true calling of it, but, you know, that kind of mix of some of the Southern storytelling things, but mixed with, like, noir-ish detective fiction.
Okay. Interesting. I hope people are listening to this and they can kind of comment on it, because if you have lots of knowledge about stuff, and you know, right, you can come and share it with us. It's really we'd really appreciate it.
Yes, we would. So right now I'm looking at the two pages, one where we have the Prairie Witch about to escape from Jerry's jewelry, and she's kind of looking up at us, and then the next page where she actually shoots Ted. Both of those faces of Prairie Witch, where she's staring at us, and kind of in both of them, they're almost just hypnotic. Like, it's just perfectly depicted with the shadow and the crazy eyes.
Yeah, crazy eyes, definitely. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. It was very... I also think it paid good homage to the witches of yesteryear, you know, the whole feeling of very Wicked Witch of the West.
Yes.
Especially with the green skin. Mm-hmm. And yet there was this certain, I don't know, modernity about it. I don't know why. The belt, the boobs, I don't know.
Yeah, I often look at boobs and think, this is very modern.
Yeah. Well, you know, because neckline, okay.
Well, you know, but also I think, I mean, when you first had modernity, my first thought was almost the tone of the story itself, you know, because we comment about, like, oh, and now maybe people are hearing both my birds and my son in the background now. I don't know. But, you know, we talked about the purple prose of the Prince Gavin story. Mm-hmm. And tonally, this feels like a complete reversal. It feels... the language feels much harder, much more straightforward. And in a way, I think that might add... not only to the visuals, but adding in, like, the language in which this story is told affects its feeling more modern.
I know. Yeah, that's true, that's true. And the setting itself and the guns, right? Yeah. And bam! Right, the sound effects. They didn't have that in the Gavin arc, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Yeah. But another thing, moving a little bit forward in the story, I also liked how they set up the thing pretty well. That they showed, like, Ted, he prepared himself before he went into the thing. So it wasn't just like they didn't just cut to the scene where he was inside the place and he was like, oh, you know, I did it on purpose here, I built a circuit. They showed the scene where he just took his time to listen and to do all this, like, recon, and, you know, that it just felt a little bit more, a lot more believable than than just slamming the reader with information.
Having I completely agree, having that does keep it from being a haha, look, I just happen to have a blah 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 a portable rod with me.
So, but it was actually for this issue I was thinking, if I were a kid and, you know, on the outside, again, we must remember the shade is talking to kids.
True.
It's a little bit scary, that scene where Roach got dragged off, you know, with that satanic sign there. And yeah, that was kind of scary. It's actually a really scary picture if you look at it.
No, it is. That facial expression.
Yeah.
On Roach.
Yeah. And the way they described his death, it's very brutal. And you know how they say, they've been killing farmers and vagrants from around, and then you talk about, like, oh, this is in Turk County, and then you just feel like this weird parallel with, you know, more impoverished places and how lives aren't regarded as valuable as other places, and then you just, and it just feels a bit real, a little bit too real.
So. Now, but in a way, if I were to have a qualm with this story, it would be that as much as I like all those flourishes. I do kind of wish they had done it in an area where they could have explored the prairie witch's motivation. That's really hard to say. Prairie witch. I feel like each time I'm going to say the prairie witch.
Poirot witch.
Let's get the big bad Poirot witch.
Someone has that accent in that accent in Looney Tunes. Who is it?
Tweety Bird.
Tweety Bird, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Oh yes, yes, yes. I taught a Pootie Cat. Mm, yeah. Okay.
But I wish because you know, for example, the fact that she's doing this dark thing and doing ritualistic sacrifice and all that, it's a terrifying note to have in the story. Mm. But part of me wants to know, well, why? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's possible that I missed it while I was reading over this, but it seems to be coloring for this story. But I'm very curious as to what her goal is, because the character has a lot of like kind of mystique around her. Yes. That I almost want to see it more fleshed out. But you know, I mean, since this is an epic, maybe it happens later.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, maybe. I never really thought of finding out more about her, but I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay.
Mm. But I guess they do manage to save the day.
Mm. But what's his name? William.
Yeah.
William and
Billy O'Dare.
Billy O'Dare. Yeah. They didn't kill her. They captured her, right?
Yes.
That's strange. Like, where is she now? Maybe we'll find out. Yeah.
I did like that moment of the, not in a contest between science and magic, for that's no contest at all.
Yeah, but after that, there's this scene where Ted, because in the beginning of the story, we learned that Ted was kind of jealous over, how does she make that broomstick fly?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, he was like, it was just a broom.
Yeah, and then the laughter.
Like, yeah, and that was like, that was a nice touch, like nice storytelling over there. Yeah,
it's a nice story moment that to me also kind of makes it feel like even though the heroes were triumphant, that they didn't completely win. It feels like an unsettling victory somehow.
Yeah, like there are still things in the world that you don't understand that are threats, and they will come back for you.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we're at the end of the
thing. Which we get the last little bit where, you know, Shade kind of has his, oh, I could tell you such tales, and I will, but not tonight. And we get I like the page of just all the different star men and, you know, and the things going on.
But could we just go one page.
Of course.
Before. And there's this panel, this little long thing at the bottom with all the kids. I like the representation. of the kids. Because there's one kid that looks a lot like Thomas, Mikael. Mikael Thomas.
Yep.
And then there's this kid who's completely white.
Almost like Grundy.
Yes, and with blue eyes, and I don't know, it's just like, aww, you know, and it's not just the O'Dare kid, that they might be descendants of people we've met in the story, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I like it.
Okay, the Starman, page.
I also like, kind of on that same page you mentioned, just the amount of almost fantastical storybook characters populating it really adds to that storybook feel. I hate to reuse the word storybook, but I can't come up with a better one right now.
It's fine. It's a good additive. Okay, and then the Starman lineup.
Yes.
Starman lineup on the next page. There's that Japanese guy again.
Yeah, with the when does he fight a samurai? I don't quite remember that.
Oh, we must find out. We must find out. Okay, and then at the bottom left hand corner there's the shade going, I could tell you such tales, then I will not, but, and I will, but not tonight. And then I like the way you know that he's the narrator, because there's this, like, block of purple behind him, and then he's, like, sort of in the page and out of the page, and... Very cool.
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah.
It's a great little page.
Yep. There's a lot of detail, though. Yes. Like, look at that. It's something I would like on a t-shirt.
I can see myself as a middle schooler really wanting this as a poster.
Right. Yeah. I get what you mean. Okay. So next.
Yeah. Last. And you know, I'm not gonna lie. This wrap up here. Mm. Especially on that bottom row of panels. The Don't You See My Child? This Planet and You. That. Mm. Is the happy ending. Yeah. Oh, it got me. It got me a little chill. Happy. Oh.
Yeah. I didn't really get the feels, but I did feel like this was really neat. Mm-hmm. It tied up everything very neatly for the reader. I just felt, okay, I can accept this last page. It was very nice. Yeah.
Overall, what do you think of this this annual?
It was very comprehensive, very educational. I don't know if it gave me a more dimensional understanding of the Starman universe, though. Mm. But it was fun. I really liked the storytelling, especially in the second half of the book, of the comic. Yeah, the way the narrative was presented. I guess I don't know why I'm going to the technicalities of it, but I like that. I like that part of it.
Oh, the art and the layout stuff?
The layout, the storytelling, the way the story was introduced to us part by part, and the characters and the motivations, the speech. You know, that I like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
For me, it's really hard for me to separate this as a single comic and from being able to see it and remember it as showing lots of the connective tissue of the tapestry that is this whole work. So it's kind of, you know, there's parts of it where I'm like, yeah, I mean, I, because of its placement, it feels more important. And kind of not, and I wonder if, like, not being able, would I have as much enjoyment out of this if I did not know some of the meaning that is in it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So I like it, but because I know its importance, I think I like it more than I would otherwise.
I know what I mean. Yeah. For me, I'm just, you know, it's my first time, so I'm just taking it very, my approach is very, let me appreciate this timing.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, that's what I think is great about having you on the show. Because you know, you get to look at it with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think if it were, you know, me and someone else who also knew where this story was going, and we're just going, oh man, oh man, just wait, oh man, just wait. Like it's. I think that's less beneficial to a listener than having this kind of this exchange.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, agreed.
Yay, yes. Us!
Yay! Okay, guys, so we'll probably do the regular Starman next. Are we going back to the...
Oh, yes, our next episode, we are going to be talking about Starman issue number 24, Demon Quest Part 1 of 3!
Yay! And again, I will be looking at it with really fresh eyes, so stay with us, because it's really... Just very newbie.
I think after 6 months, I'm not sure if you get to ring that bell as much anymore. I don't know.
I mean, just today I had to ask you, that person who draws the art, it's a penciler, right? So, you know, I'm still really uneducated still. It's not nothing on you. It's just, you know, I've not been retaining the information very well. Yeah, so... Demon Quest, you said? We are going to do Demon Quest? Okay. Alright, I'm just going off on a tangent here and just going to say that Demon Quest makes me remember that arc of Shade and the Odair in the picture. And they might be chasing a demon, I don't know.
Q Brent whistling. Where can they find you on the internets?
Twitter, mostly. Instagram, and recently Snapchat, and, a bunch of places. You just kind of have to Google me. It's Q-U-E-K, quick channel. I've been just going on all the socials, so I'm on everything. Yes, how about you, Brent?
You can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour. You can find my main website, deadlytroubadour.com, where I write, where I blog, where I share podcasts. You could find me on Facebook for Brent Thomas Author. If you're enjoying this show, please go to Brent and Lydia Talk Starman on iTunes. Please rate and review. Those pages are looking lonely. We could use a few ratings and reviews, please. If you're really a fan and really want to give me that pat on the back, then why don't you head over to my Patreon, patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and donate a dollar. For just a dollar a month, I can give you all kinds of smiles. Wait a minute, that sounded a little dirty. Never mind, but still, I'd appreciate it. You know, helps me pay for the hostings of the show and able to store hours and hours and hours of free entertainment for you, the listener.
Yay. All right, then.
Yeah.
Please donate. Please help us out. And we'll see you next issue.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.